Is it ever right to lie to avoid a greater evil? That's a choice one man faced who feared his wife would be taken from him. Abram would later become Abraham. But before God changed his name, he tried to escape famine by going to Egypt with his wife. Genesis chapter 12 tells the story of attempted deceit and its aftermath. For a time, the lie actually worked. Stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Erwin Lutzer now continues a series on famines, deserts, and other hard places. In this, the second of seven messages, let's turn again to Genesis chapter 12 to see a man called of God tell a lie.
And so what happened now is that his lying becomes profitable, because you see, if they said that she was his sister, now the custom was that Pharaoh was going to have to negotiate with Abraham and give him some kind of a dowry and buy him off so that Pharaoh could marry his sister. And that's exactly what happens. You'll notice it says that Pharaoh saw her, verse 15, and they praised her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house, and for her sake he dealt well with Abraham. And he had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male servants, female donkeys, and camels. Abraham thought to himself, my deceit is working. Not all lies are immediately exposed. Sometimes they work. It's like the Sunday school boy said when he was asked what a lie was. He says, a lie is an abomination unto the Lord, but a very present help in time of trouble. Could I say in parenthesis that not all financial blessing is a sign of God's favor? Pharaoh gave Abraham all of these things, even though they were given to him based on deceit. And so Abraham says to himself, the lie seems to be working, but there is a shadow over Abraham's soul. No question about it. And this shadow becomes very evident because the Bible says now that he lost his testimony in Egypt. Notice it's this, that the Lord afflicts Pharaoh. You may say, well, why doesn't the Lord afflict Abraham? God had something special for Abraham and Sarah. So instead of afflicting Abraham, which he might well have done, he actually afflicts Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. So Pharaoh called Abraham and said, what is this that you've done to me? Why didn't you tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go. And Pharaoh gave the men orders concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. Abraham backslid when he was in Egypt. He resorted to deceit and lying and panic, and he didn't trust God. You'll notice that there is no altar in Egypt. Nowhere is there any indication that he sought God's mind in the midst of this famine, in the midst of these dry wells. He did not seek the Lord, but he did what seemed right, and it involved deceit. And here he is being reprimanded by a pagan king. The pagan king says, get out of here. Do you imagine Abraham turning around and witnessing to him and saying, you know, you shouldn't believe in all of your pagan Egyptian gods. You should agree with and worship the God who spoke to me, who gave me the land. Could Abraham say that with integrity? No. It's like a businessman whose mouth is totally stopped, because everyone at work knows who he really is, how he behaves, what he has done, what is in his resume, the corners that he has cut, the lies that he has told, the little deals that he has tried to wield, and he is paralyzed when it comes to his witness for Christ, because you could just imagine what the people would say. spare me. So Abraham leaves, and his testimony is gone in Egypt. Now, it's interesting that when he does this, it has a great deal of impact on his family. It has negative influence on his family. Remember this, that when we backslide, you and I may come back as parents, but maybe our children don't. This was certainly true in the case of David, wasn't it? David bounced back from his adultery. He received God's forgiveness. He was back in fellowship, but his kids never recovered. So here you have an instance where Abraham was deceitful. It affected Sarah. You can imagine the rupture in that relationship that took place, as Sarah had to become a party to Abraham's deceit. But also it influenced a man by the name of Lot, his nephew. Lot was there in Egypt and evidently went with Abraham, of course, because the text says that they were together. They separated later in the next chapter. And Lot looked at the riches of Egypt, and even when Lot came out of Egypt, Egypt did not come out of Lot's heart. He had seen something that he wanted, and he never got over it. You say, well, Pastor Lutzer, is there any evidence for that? And the answer is yes. In chapter 13, where Abraham and Lot separate because they all needed their own pasture land, Lot, Abraham said, you can choose whatever you want and I'll take the opposite. Verse 10 of chapter 13, Lot lifted up his eyes and saw the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. He said, this is so good, it reminds me of Egypt. And Lot made that decision, and he ended up in Sodom and Gomorrah. And what a sad tale that turned out to be. Decisions with repercussions. But there's something else that happened in Egypt. And that is, when he was there, they brought back with him an Egyptian slave girl, a servant in the household. And her name was Hagar. The Bible refers to her as Hagar the Egyptian. And Abraham obviously got her when they were there in the land of Egypt. And you know the rest of the story, how that Sarah couldn't have children at that time, and Abraham has a relationship with Hagar, and Ishmael is born, and the whole history of the Middle East was affected by that decision that he made. So Abraham bounces back, and he's back in fellowship. You say, well, how do I know that he's back in fellowship? Chapter 13 opens with him going to the Negev and then going to Bethel, where he had been at the beginning, at first. And you'll notice it says in verse 4, to the place where he had made an altar at the first. And there Abraham called on the name of the Lord. The backslider was worshiping God again, and the backslider came home and was restored by God. You say, well, Pastor Lutzer, what's the bottom line here? How does this change our lives and my particular famine? You may be in a situation where your wells are dry, so to speak, and I speak not only economically, but in terms of relationships, in terms of hardship, in terms of crisis. How does it affect us? Let me give you some observations and then nail it to the wall for all of us. First of all, the God who saves us is the God who sustains us. The God who went with Abraham into the land would have been able to keep Abraham in the land. No question about it. Now, as I already mentioned, it isn't wrong for us to move when we're in a famine in one part of the country and go to another. But for Abraham, this was unique. The problem was he believed in God's guidance into the land, but he couldn't trust God to sustain him in the land. There's a very interesting passage in the 26th chapter of Genesis. Genesis chapter 26, Isaac, the son of Abraham. It says, chapter 26, verse 1, "Now there was a famine in the land besides the former famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Gerar to Abimelech, the king of the Philistines." That's actually on the way to Egypt. "And the Lord appeared to him and said, don't go down to Egypt, dwell in the land of which I shall tell you." And then God reiterates his covenant with Isaac. And Isaac trusts God to keep him in the midst of the famine and to grant him the grace to stay there. And what follows in the rest of the chapter is quite unique and even surprising, because we notice that Isaac, it says in verse 12, Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year 100-fold. Well, that's unique, isn't it? He was in the land of famine, but God says, I am going to provide for you in the midst of your famine. I'm not going to take the famine away, but I'm going to grant you grace and strength so that you can live in the midst of the famine. To those of you who are going through an actual economic famine, what this means is that where we are. We can't change our situation. Many of us perhaps can't who are going through that. We can't change where we go. We can't just pick up and move. It's so complicated. Can God sustain you in the midst of that heartache, that famine? The answer is yes. Isaac reminds us of the fact that you should be willing to do anything. You should be willing to trust God not only for a harvest, but the rest of the chapter in 26 says that Isaac says that the Philistines filled the wells that Abraham had dug. And Isaac went, it says, and he redug Abraham's wells, and they had water. Look around. There may be some move you can make that you've not thought of. Well, this is Pastor Lutzer, and you know what the bottom line is? God takes us through some very difficult circumstances to try our faith. At the end of the day, whether it was Abraham or whether it was Isaac or Jacob or you or me, the question is, can we believe God's promises when things get difficult? When life comes unraveled, and when our hopes and dreams are dashed to the ground? This series of messages, Famines, Deserts, and Other Hard Places, was preached here at the Moody Church to encourage our congregation, and I most assuredly pray that these messages will now encourage you. Thanks so much for joining us today, and I hope that you continue to listen to this broadcast as you have opportunity, as we'll continue the message next time, right here on Running to Win.
Erwin Lutzer with more of Trusting God When the Wells Are Dry, the second of seven messages in a series on famines, deserts, and other hard places. Tomorrow, tune in for some thoughts on downsizing when things get tough. Running to Win's purpose is to help you understand God's roadmap for your race of life. Our current series can be yours on CD as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Ask about famines, deserts, and other hard places. Online, go to offerrtw.com. Or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. This is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.